You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone. This is Raise Your Voice as part of the D-Raise Bay Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brett Rutherford. And as we head into the All-Star break, we have got a great show with two very special guests. First, from Raise the Roof, it's Bree Gonzalez. Bree, second time on the show. Welcome back. And how has your baseball season been going?
Certainly better now that the Rays are on a nice little win streak. Feels good. Ups and downs with the team, but...
It does feel good. I think you were on in the middle of the winning streak last time, and now they're in a new winning streak. And we talked about, like, there's going to be, you know, weeks where they might only win one game, and you're just going to have to deal with it and not to freak out. And that's kind of what they've done. And now they're back to winning ways. So all good there. Also joining the show this week, very much a recurring guest. It's Darby Robinson. Darby, how's it going?
It's going good, Brett. It's good to be on this star-studded show right now.
And, you know, it's not a coincidence that the three of us are on here going into the All-Star break as Mike Zanino was named an All-Star for the first time. And we are, there's several of us, but three of the biggest Mike Zanino truthers out there on Twitter. So we're going to talk more about the All-Stars and Mike Zanino in a little bit. But how cool is that for you guys to hear that Zanino was going to get his first trip to the Midsummer Classic?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Gator, so it's kind of a double meaning for me. And I don't know if we talked about it last time or if I even knew yet, but I had tweets from literally when he was drafted that I found. I didn't even know that I knew he existed, but apparently I did. So, been a big Z fan, apparently, since 2012 or whatever it was. But yeah, I'm excited. He's having a really great year. And after, you know, kind of not being as successful as I'm sure he knew he could be during his time with the Rays in, you know, his kind of home state, it's good to see him finally getting back to this Mike Zanino.
When he was with the Mariners, I kind of enjoyed watching him over there and always was like, oh, it would be great to have a catcher like him that you could like kind of dream upon. And the Rays have had him, you know, he traded for him a few years back and, you know, the offense was definitely not great. It's been pretty rough, a lot of strikeouts, not a lot of contact, and not enough power. Like he's got some of the best, biggest raw power in the majors. Like he's already had like multiple 440 plus home runs. He has unlimited power. It's just the contact would always be the thing that was failing him. And he had a couple of seasons in Seattle where he kind of put it together and it took a step back with Tampa Bay. But I still like really enjoyed him because he always calls a great game. He's a elite level defender. And he's just a really good guy. Like he just seems like a guy that, you know, is doing his best and would always try to contribute and would always contribute in the defensive side of the game. So even if his offense was like a black hole, it was similar to like Kevin Kiermaier, where you'd be like, listen, he's at least dominant in one side of the game. And then even last postseason, he kind of started to put it together and really had some huge games in the playoffs. And that's rolled over to this year. I mean, he mentioned that, you know, Chad Mottola and him kind of reworked his swing a little bit. He's reworked his swing about like three times in the majors. So there's only so many times you could do that before, like every time it's like, all right, let's rework it again. But yeah, he's hitting amazingly well. He still strikes out a lot, but who cares? Because you want just when he gets contact, it's going to be an incredibly loud and explosive hit.
Yeah, I remember back after the 2017 season, my current at that time favorite player on the Rays, Malik Smith, shipped off to Seattle, and here comes Mike Zanino. a catcher that we knew had a ton of pop, we knew was a great defensive player, and then yeah, those first 2 years, he really struggled at the plate. I think we all saw the defense, and that's why the Rays kept bringing him back for, you know, several million dollars, and he was back again this year, and he's put up, he's on pace to have the most home runs in his career. He's got a 326 ISO right now. Like Darby said, still striking out a lot, but even if that power started to dry up a little bit in the second half, he's provided so much offense to this team, a 118 WRC plus. He's been great and really, really exciting that he's an all-star. So we've got a lot of other huge news really this week, including, I guess we'll start with this, the breaking news right before we started recording after Friday evening's game against Toronto is that the Rays have more than one all-star in Mike Zunino. They also have Joey Wendell going to his first all-star game. And this one was kind of out of the blue. I think he's probably replacing Carlos Correa on the roster, who announced that he was not going to attend. His wife or his fiance or wife is pregnant, and he wants to be with her during those off days. Very understandable. But Joey Wendell taking his place. Now, out of all the Rays position players, and maybe it's a matter of what positions are needed on the roster, I did not think that Joey Wendell was going to be the next man up. I thought maybe you could see an Austin Meadows sneak in, and who knows, maybe he will, or even a Randy Arozarena. I know Joey Wendell has had a great season, but I really wasn't expecting this late call for Joey Wendell into the All-Star game. But man, is he deserving. Again, another guy, he's having a great offensive season, but has just continued to play incredible defense at third base for the Rays. It's really awesome to see a guy that had one really good year for the Rays, then struggled with injury and struggled at the plate the next year, but he's turned into that player that had that first breakout season and grown from there. How cool is it that Joey Wendell and Mike Zunino, I mean, I don't think you can pick a better pair of players to go represent the organization in Denver.
I think going into the season, you probably weren't like really saying like those are the two, like the reigning defending AL champs are going to have two all-stars. You're like, yeah, absolutely. Who? Let me guess. Brandon Lau, Randy, Wander got called up early. Oh man. Yeah. Tyler Glasnow for sure. Blake Snell, depending upon when you told this person in the back in time, maybe Nick Anderson. Yeah. Diego, Pete Fairbanks, like one of the stable. You'd probably get about the 15th, 16th guess before you could be like, Wendell, maybe? Like, you'd never get to Zunino.
Like, Choi is fun. He could win the fan vote, right? He could sneak in there.
Exactly, yeah. But very both very, very deserving. I mean, Zunino's been one of the leading catchers in all of the AL, especially by F4. And then Joey Wendell is currently ninth in all of baseball by third baseman at 1.9 F4. Like this is he's having an amazing year, and he hasn't just played third base, but he's been really fantastic defensively. He's been swinging a good stick. It's a pretty earned spot if you really look at it.
I mean, we are living in a universe where Joey Wendell could be a 4-win player come season's end. And I think that's a universe. I mean, he got to 3.8 F4 back in 2018. But for him, I think a lot of people, even going into this season, kind of wrote that off as a one-off year, that he is a good player, a valuable big league player, but that he was never going to reach those levels where, hit 300 and, drove in 61 runs that year. I don't think anybody kind of thought that was going to be the norm for Joey Wendell, and it hasn't been, but seeing him get back to those peaks has been really awesome to see. Bree?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much like you guys said, they are just the quintessential Rays, just Rays baseball players. I mean, strong defense, the hitting will be there or it won't be. I mean, Joey, he's different from, a lot of guys that you would think would be all-stars because he's not going to hit all the home runs that you see out of, your typical all-star player. Yeah. But, he can sure get on base. And, Zunino's the opposite. He's not going to get on base a ton, but he's going to hit the ball a long way, and both of them have really, really stellar defense. So I just think it's a testament to the Rays that these two kind of like guys that came out of nowhere, they can develop and, have these years where they are deserving to be all-stars, even if they're not like the huge names. So excited to see it.
The 2018 Rookie of the Year race is like really, you know, it was great in 2018. It's taken a couple rough years, and now 2021 just really working out. Andrew Har's trying his best, but like the two real like ones that were neck and neck for that Rookie of the Year, both right on top, going to the Midsummer Classic.
Well, Darby, we're not that far off from the Yankees fans tweeting about, mock trades where they send Andujar and try to get Joey Wendell from us. We're not that far off from that reality. But another really cool part of this is not only are Wendell and Zunino going, the entire Rays coaching staff is. And you know the relationship that Mike Zunino has with Kevin Cash and Kyle Snyder. And, you know, we've heard the stories about Kevin Cash and Joey Wendell and how they joke a lot in the clubhouse. And I think that's really cool. You see Ozzie Timmons out there, Matt Quatraro, Chad Mottola, Rodney Linares. It's going to be really cool. All those guys very much deserving. I know I missed a couple of the other guys on the staff, but to see them go out there and represent the American League is really cool. So. In other news, some other really exciting. This is a great week for Rays baseball. Not only have they not lost a game yet at the time of recording, which means they'll have lost the next two by the time you're listening to this. I'm totally jinxing it. Vidal Brujan called up, the third Rays top prospect, well, probably fourth Rays top prospect called up this season. We see him called up going into the series against Cleveland. There was a doubleheader played because of Hurricane Elsa. And he gets brought up as the 27th man for that doubleheader. He stays on the roster after the off day as Mike Brasso heads to the IL. And he had a really great first game. A couple of really nice plays at second base. He drove in a run. He stole a base. And I think Vidal Brujan, we knew that the group of Walls, Brujan, and Franco, that we were probably going to at least see two of those guys this season, but most likely all three at some point in some fashion. And I don't think anyone expected Brujan to be the last to get called up. I think we all kind of thought he'd be first to get called up. And obviously things changed when Willy Adames was traded to Milwaukee. But then you kind of see Vidal Brujan have to take a step back. Walls gets called up to be the starting shortstop. Franco gets called up to play third and short. And he was the last one left out of that group of three position players. And he finally gets his turn, and he takes advantage of the early opportunities that he got. And Bree, I know you've interacted with Brujan a lot on Twitter. He's been a great follow. He interacts with a lot of fans. And I think that's going to make him one of the easiest players to root for on this Rays team.
Yeah, he's already my favorite player. As long as Glasnow is injured, like, he doesn't count. So we've got Brujan right now. But yeah, I mean, I've been so excited to see him. I got, flamed a little bit earlier in the season for saying I was more excited for him than Wander, actually. And I said at the time, I was like, honestly, I just think Brujan's closer. I mean, clearly I was incorrect. One of the many things I've been incorrect about. I mean,
you were only off by a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was. But yeah, I mean, I didn't expect to see Wander even until like September, but whatever, they're here and I'm happy about it. But yeah, Brujan, I mean, his debut, it was everything you want to see out of him, pretty much, to be honest with you. Great defense, you saw the speed, the bat came through, so I'm so excited. I hope he's here for a long time. I know you can't put too much weight into that, but he's already, like you said, he's gonna be a fan favorite. He seems really excited to be here. Tweeted at the Lightning, he's like, hey, someone get me a Lightning jersey. So he's embracing the Tampa Bay area already.
Darby, it's going to be really interesting, right? I mean, there hasn't been a major trade. There's still, there's only a few weeks left before that July 31st deadline. Where does Brujan, like, fit into this 26-man active roster for this season and this season only? Because we've seen him play second. He came in tonight at the very last inning and played left, but it's going to be an interesting fit for at least the next few weeks.
Well, I think a lot of his long-term place seems like center field, which is the deepest position on the Rays right now. So, Margot is hurt right now, and that's where he's like taking Margot's spot. But like you have Kevin Kiermaier, who's one of the best defensive center fielders in all of baseball. You have Brett Phillips, who's one of the best defensive center fielders in all of baseball. And you have Manuel Margot, who's one of the best defensive center fielders in all of baseball. So Brujan, it might be the starting center fielder next year potentially, but like right now it's a kind of an embarrassment of riches. So you would imagine something in that pile gets moved. It's not easy. I think the Rays, it's a good spot to be in because, you know, injuries do happen. Like Margot is out right now. So it's really great that, oh, you lose a really key contributor like Manuel Margot. Well, here's one of the 30 best prospects in all of the game to come up. You know, you have it like an injury or a ding up in the infield. Oh, here comes the best prospect in all of baseball in Wander. You have a guy miss a start for pitching. Well, here's Luis Patino to come up. That depth is really good. It's just, it does make it a little bit complicated. It makes it complicated because there's still a lot of moves to be made, but not necessarily moves that have to be made. And so we might see Brujan a little bit more kind of up and down, but he does sort of fit a good utility role. He's played third, short, second, the both corner outfielders and center field in Durham so far. So he has played around a lot. Walls is pretty much going to be locked in at shortstop because that's his best defensive position. Wander's played third and short, and he can also play second. So the versatility is great. And the fact that he's a switch hitter is really great. So I think they can use him a lot in maybe a Wendell or Brasso type of role. But yeah, his spot, the roster, it's going to get really tight on both the active roster and like the 40 man as people come back from injury. As playing, it's a very tight situation, but I guess, you know, I don't think Neander's losing too much sleep over the fact that he has to make choices between which really talented players does he want to add in.
Well, like you said, Wander's not going down. I don't even think a Jared Kelenic level slump, which I don't expect to happen. I don't even think that would send him back down to AAA. Taylor Walls, even if at the plate he goes through a slump, he's already one of the best defensive shortstops in the big leagues. Like both leagues, AL, NL, he is right up there in that upper echelon. He had another great, really great play tonight. The range he's got, his arm, that quick release. Like he is the best defensive infielder on the current team and really in all of baseball. He's up there. So he's probably not going down again. Brujan is another guy that maybe... Yeah, Margot might be on the IL through the trade deadline, which makes things a little tricky. Not to say that they would trade Margot, but then you also look at, in center field, Kiermaier and Phillips, the other two center fielders. There is a weird tightrope that you have to balance, and I don't like to get too much into the weeds with this, with, you know, losing the clubhouse and whatnot, because we've heard it time and time again with the Rays. But Kevin Kiermaier and Brett Phillips are very much two of... not only the faces of the franchise in the public eye, but they are leaders in the clubhouse. They bring energy in the clubhouse and in the dugout. And losing either one at this point in the season, and it feels redundant to have them both on the roster, especially when you're trying to fit guys like Manuel Margot and Vidal Brujan in there. But you've got to be kind of careful, like, making a move like that. And again, I know the players understand it, and as long as the team's winning, there's going to be buy-in. But the team is right there in second place in the AL East. And Bree, do you think that losing either KK or Phillips could I'm not going to say lose the clubhouse, but could change the atmosphere around this ball club?
You know, that's one thing I was really concerned about with Adames, honestly, because they traded him in the middle of that big win streak. And for me, I guess KK is of course the leader. But for me, it felt like Willie was kind of the heart and soul of the team. And you traded him. I was worried they were going to lose immediately, honestly. Like, I didn't think it would be an extended thing, but I thought there'd be kind of an adjustment period. And thankfully, there wasn't. And they seem to have gotten, you know, they've seemed to have covered that. Brett Phillips especially, honestly, stepped into that role. So, you know, it's something that definitely could happen. But like you said, because of the buy-in, I don't think that it would break the team. So if it needs to be done, I mean, Neander's shown that he's not afraid to do it.
Yeah.
And I think if it needs to be done, it needs to be done. And I think it'd be fine.
If the Willie trade doesn't break the clubhouse, nothing. Exactly. There's nothing that can break the clubhouse.
Exactly. That's, yep.
It, like that. That is, there is no more core central cheerleading got, like, yes, Brett Phillips is a huge Clubhouse guy. G-Man is a huge fan favorite and Clubhouse guy. And Kevin Kiermaier is the veteran presence, the leader. Like, Willy Adames is, like, the heart and soul of the team. They traded him, and they've not lost a beat. So I think that's, like, the ultimate, like, boom, you can do anything. You can tear any. There is no, I think you can potentially, a losing streak mixed with a trade can hurt things. But I think that's where you just trust Kevin Cash and those managers to just be able to keep those guys focused and not spiraling like that.
The other thing is it's not like you're trading a player, then all of a sudden there's a black hole at a position that's going to be filled by the next guy from AAA. Like when they traded Willy Adames, it's like, wow, they've got three top like 100 prospects to pick from to fill that spot right away. It was Taylor Walls. He did great. Oh, boom, now Wander Franco's up. He's going to play a bunch of shortstop too. Like the Rays, I think the players could see that situation play out. And I think something similar is happening in center field. And I think it's pretty crazy that all three, the group of Margot, Kiermaier, and Phillips, are all on the roster still at this point. They've been on the roster together now for about a calendar year. They got Brett Phillips last July. So that's been pretty crazy, I'd say. And then, it could get interesting as things head up and head towards the trade deadline. So we're going to take a real quick break and then come back and talk a little bit about the All-Star break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And we're back on Raise Your Voice. It is All-Star Week. We've got the Futures game. I don't know if there's going to be a celebrity softball game this year. The Home Run Derby and then the All-Star game. First, guys, I want to talk about some All-Star snubs. So I think there's probably a couple Rays that maybe we could put in the snub category. But there's a couple players that I'm really upset aren't on the team that aren't Rays. But can we talk about Tyler Glass now first? I mean, with pitchers, it's so easy to add a pitcher to the roster, to name him as part of the roster, and then quickly replace him. This did not happen with Tyler Glass now, and he's still yet to make his first All-Star team.
Yeah, so my thing with this is if they didn't name Bieber, I would have been okay with it. But they named Bieber. He got hurt, I think, the day before or after Glass now did. And he hasn't had as good of a season, honestly. They've pitched like about the same, you know, amount of games and everything, but Glasnow was significantly better, I thought. I mean, I think everyone kind of, the numbers speak for themselves, but you know, here they name Bieber. I'm not sure if he was a player or a committee vote in, but either way, I don't really understand it. Like I said, if Bieber's not there and it's all, you know, healthy pitchers, okay, I get it. But just, yeah, I don't know. Bieber is not better than Glasnow this year.
Did any starter make it that's thrown less than Tyler Glasnow in innings? Glasnow's thrown 88 over 14 starts, which is the same amount of starts as Bieber. Bieber's thrown a couple more innings. It's only four less starts than the leading start getters, which have 18 at this point in the season. It's not like he missed half the year. And when he was healthy, he was among the best in the American League. He was still an American League Cy Young candidate at that point, and maybe would have stuck up there even longer. Stuck up there, that's a no pun intended there, as Gerrit Cole started to struggle in the month of June and into July. But yeah, it's one of those where, like you said, like Bieber is on there. They've had the same amount of starts. Glasnow was better in his starts. And it feels like Bieber was kind of picked because he's also the reigning American League Cy Young. And yeah, it's just, it feels like, I don't know how this works. And I know the players, you know, the players that vote on this or however the other voting mechanisms work, they're not going to sit there and think, oh, yeah, we can just easily replace Glasnow. Let's make sure we get him on the All-Star team. It sucks for Tyler because he was having the best season of his career, that had went past, you know, the month of May, and it's a shame.
It's frustrating too because, you know, you sit here and you want to like be really upset about it, or at least I do. But like everyone's like, well, he was hurt anyways, he couldn't pitch. I was like, yes, but still, I don't know.
All the more reason to just like toss that on, right? Like what are we doing here? Every team gets a nomination, right? So you like Detroit Tigers, like woo, Gregory Soto, like an average reliever at this point. Like no real offense, but like, come on. We're not like the All-Star game isn't this like pinnacle of like, it's not something that needs to be protected, right? We already are giving a participation trophy in there. So like just honor the people. And here's the thing too, like just as a very selfish reason for MLB, don't you want Tyler Glasnow at the game? Just the human angel that is Tyler Glasnow, the pinnacle of human perfection, just let him stand there and just look gorgeous. Like that's all you need. Why?
I like the way you think, Darby.
Darby, you bring up you bring up a great point. I wonder if Major League Baseball maybe didn't want Tyler Glasnow at the All-Star game.
I like the conspiracy theory.
The comments he made right after his injury regarding the whole crackdown on sticky stuff. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Because like Bree said, Shane Bieber's in. I mean, if Bieber's in, Glasnow should also be in. But those last comments he made make things interesting. I'm not putting my tinfoil hat on.
Just makes you think, though, when Cole is basically a confirmed spider tack user, but he doesn't make comments like that, and he gets in. I mean, I guess you can't not have Cole in there, but...
Right. All right, a couple other snubs. I'm upset Yasmani Grandal isn't in. I'm glad Mike Zunino's in, and if Yasmani Grandal had been in, probably would have meant Zunino not in. But you look at his slash line, 188 average, 388 on base percentage. He's got 14 home runs and a 134 WRC plus. His walk rate, 24.4%. Just an incredible stat line for Yasmani Grandal. And I'm upset that he's not in. Clayton Kershaw, though, is the guy that I was very shocked to find out just right before we started recording that he's not on the All-Star team. He has been right up there in the National League. I think he's sixth in the NL in F-WAR for starting pitchers. He's got a 3.39 ERA, over 106 in the third innings. He started all 18 games. He's not old yet, but it feels like he is because he's been pitching for such a high level for so long. But he's 33 years old and pitching just as well as he ever has, and not chosen. Like, what else could Clayton Kershaw do? Because the other thing is Darby mentioned, yes, the All-Star game isn't sacred. And a lot of times players get picked just because they've been picked every year before that. Felt like it should have been the same way for Clayton Kershaw. Don't know how he got left off.
Well, it's the same thing with Mike Trout this year. He's been hurt for a good portion of the season. And yeah, he was doing great before that because he's Mike Trout. He doesn't not do great. And he gets selected for, I think it was the 9th straight season. Cool. It's great. But like he doesn't deserve, like Mike Trout doesn't deserve to be the starter in the game, and he's not going to play. And so it'll probably be Cedric Mullins, who legitimately was a snub because he should have been the starter. He has been amazing for Baltimore. And unlike a lot of these bad kind of tanking teams that have I don't know, somebody has to go, like Cedric Mullins deserves to be a starting outfielder in the game. And so, yeah, but it's like, oh, can you really blame like people for voting for Mike Trout? Because he's amazing. Clayton Kershaw is kind of the same way. Like, just give it to him. He's like, he's a Hall of Fame guy. So just be like, whatever. Clayton Kershaw, is he breathing still? Yeah, he's in. Done. Is he not like terrible? Done. And this year he's great. He's great. So I don't know.
He's like back to his prime numbers and a lot of stats, like numbers that he was hitting in that run where he made 7 straight All-Star games. And then he quote unquote fell off where he put up ERAs of 2.73, 3.03, 2.16, and 3.39. But he's back to like in strikeouts, back to the numbers that he was putting up in his, you know, his late 20s in that prime where he won 3 Cy Youngs out of 4 years and an MVP in there as well. Yeah, that one just, like, I don't know how that happens. Like, if it is players voting or coaches around the, I honestly don't know how it works, and I probably should have done my research. But, like, what players are sitting down there, and you hear what they say about Clayton Kershaw, how he might be the best starting pitcher ever. And it's like, you sit down, and you didn't vote for him? Like, I don't know how this works. But anyways, any other snubs that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I got one. It's kind of the same thing as Kershaw. I thought Scherzer deserved to be named. I mean, I know he's not having like his best year, but like he's one of those, he makes it every year and he's still pitching very well. I mean, I feel like he's got to be in there, but
yeah. 98 innings, 2.66 ERA. What else could these guys do?
It's one of these things too, where like the All-Star game, we just have to be honest with what it is. And it is a fan exhibition. But it does matter to some people. It matters to also like Hall of Fame voters, like weird Hall of Fame voters, not good Hall of Fame voters, but like the weird ones that you do need to break the 70% threshold. And you can sort of see like people being like, oh, he broke the streak of, I don't know why the All-Star game, this is the big problem for me with the All-Star game, right? Is like, it is a frivolous thing that's for the fans. And yet there are some weirdly important things there that shouldn't be there. And so it's like, if it is for the fans, why not just, I want to see, I am a fan of baseball. I love Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer. Bring them, like, I want to see them in the game. So if they're even in a reasonable range, I want them there. And I can't imagine there's a fan in baseball that's not like, oh, I would love to see Mad Max show down against anybody. Like, even on his, like, I don't know, 60th percentile skills, and he's done better than that this year, he's still like Max Scherzer. Like, there's only so many more innings we're going to get from these people. So like, I don't want to lose any of them. I want to see them all. Plus, he's going to be one of those guys that might actually pitch there, because again, the Nats are kind of maybe competing, maybe not, but like Juan Soto is doing the home run derby. Max Scherzer would actually pitch. Jacob DeGrom isn't, and he shouldn't. So like, you're going to lose some pitchers. So just throw any pitcher. I'm like, just throw them in there and then see who sticks around after, you know, they decide like, right. I don't want to throw like 30 pitches on my arm in an exhibition, because every pitch is a gamble. But yeah, Mad Max, 100%, always. Why not?
Everything Darby said, I'm looking at the rosters now, and it's pretty clear that one of the spots that, because every team has to have a representative, you have Germán Márquez as the representative for the Rockies. Their only other like true candidate would have been Trevor Story. He's doing the home run derby. He's not on the All-Star team. Germán Márquez, very much deserving of an All-Star spot. Don't get me wrong. He's got a 3.59 ERA where he pitches half of his starts at Coors Field. And he's thrown over 100 innings already this season. But it looks like that, yeah, Kershaw or Scherzer probably more deserving at this point, even though they don't have to pitch half their starts at Coors. But Márquez is going to slide on there. Yu Darvish has been really good. And again, I'm like picking between all-stars here. They're all great, but he was picked. Trevor Rogers, very deserving. Brandon Woodruff. You look at the guys at the top, where especially Kevin Gausman, Jacob DeGrom, Zach Wheeler, like those guys, Wheeler, all very much deserving. But yeah, and maybe they'll get added. But at this point, Kershaw, who's, you know, been to a ton of All-Star games, might just be like, yeah, I'm going to just hang out with my family this week. Max Scherzer's like, well, you know, I'm looking at real estate in St. Pete for when the Rays trade me later. I'm only somewhat joking there. Let's go into the home run derby, because I think this is a really fun field. Another event that's it's supposed to be fun. I really don't care. It's like the slam dunk contest. Yes, I'm sure probably there are guys that pass in the slam dunk contest that would be able to, you know, perform better than the guys that do go. But you look at the home run derby, and it's honestly one of the best out of all the big four sports in the U.S. all-star events. Probably the best, the most exciting, the most easy to, like, the best thing to watch on TV. It's a great television product. I really enjoy the bracket setup that they have with the timer. I think it just adds another level of excitement. Again, I don't really care if it's got, competitive integrity. Like, it is what it is. It's a home run derby. Just have fun. But looking through the eight names, we've got Shohei Ohtani, who is the hottest name on the planet and right now active best player playing with Mike Trout on the IL, best player on the planet. Juan Soto, who is, you know, maybe going to be the best hitter in baseball for the next 10 to 15 years, you know.
Ed Williams reincarnated.
Right, even though he's competing against the likes of Shohei Ohtani and in the first
Wander
round.
Franco.
And Wander Franco. Salvador Perez, that name doesn't do a whole lot for me. But Pete Alonso is the defending champ from 2019. We didn't have a home run derby last year, so Alonso still holds that. That's another Gator for you, Bree. Joey Gallo is maybe has the most pure power out of anyone in baseball. To see him go to Denver and do that is really cool. Trevor Story is the hometown guy. I think it's cool to have a hometown guy in the home run derby. Again, I don't really care if it's the best eight home run hitters. Story can hit bombs, and it'll be cool to see him do it at his home ballpark, especially because it's probably his last season there. So with the Rockies having no clue what they're doing. Matt Olson, a guy that I think goes under the radar in terms of big hitters playing out in Oakland on the West Coast in a small market. So cool to see him get a shot at this. And then Trey Mancini, who is a lock for comeback player of the year. I think it's the guy that everybody's going to be rooting for that night. And so I just think there's a lot of really great storylines in all of these guys. And to see them compete on the same night is going to be a ton of fun. But I kind of want to do some predictions. So let's go round by round and pick our home run derby champion. So we've got Ohtani versus Soto in the first round. What are you guys thinking?
I have Ohtani hitting him farther, Soto hitting more.
I'm feeling the same way, Bree, I think.
I think that's a really good prediction too, because I do a little bit worry about Ohtani's kind of longer swing. I'll go with Ohtani, but that's going to be like, that's a crazy matchup. That's like the two most like pure hitters in this round, like going against each other. So I feel like either one of those guys could absolutely win this one. I'll go with Ohtani just to mix it up.
It's also one of those where it's like this, and I think, I don't know how they're going to do it in order, but they're the first set of names on the bracket. If they're first, like it could be one of those where they steal the show and then it all goes downhill mm-hmm. from there. Mm-hmm. Like we've seen this happen time and time again. Josh Hamilton in 2008 puts on an amazing show in the first round, ends up losing. A lot of people remember that. Justin Morneau wins that home run derby. But everybody remembers Josh Hamilton and what he did. So I think that could be the case here. I'm starting to lean Soto. We'll all keep track of our own brackets. We won't vote. We won't have one bracket. We'll all keep track of our own. The next one is Salvador Perez and the defending champ, Pete Alonso. I think Alonso wins this one easily.
How cool would it have been if that was Alonso and Zunino? Man, that would have been.
Two Gators, yeah.
Yep, two Gators.
A Tampa native and a Cape Coral native. That would have been a lot of fun.
Would have been nice. But yeah, you got to go Alonso here.
Yeah, polar bear by far. He already knows how the rounds work too. Like I think that's sort of like we saw this back when they changed it with a Todd Frazier, who like literally was like gaming it, like being like, I like not the best power hitter there, but like basically was like, all right, I'm going to kind of cheat a little bit. And the second it's like kind of out, just throw me the next one because nobody really cares. So they're not going to like be like, hey, hold on, too fast. They're just like, just throw a couple. So I think Pete has a really good edge here because he's done this before. So I'm going polar bear for big time.
The only thing I can think of now there's $1 million prize on the line that might, you know, upset some players. Like they might ask for the rules to be enforced a little bit, but none of these guys are on league minimum. Like if Vlad Jr. had been in it, like that's twice his salary. If like for him to win the home run derby, all of these guys are, making several million dollars at this point in their career. But still, you know, who's going to bet? You know, it's still $1 million on the line, but all in good fun. All right, next matchup is Joey Gallo and Trevor Story. Probably some familiarity there for Story doing it in his home ballpark with a packed stadium. I think it's going to be really fun, but I don't think it's going to be so much fun that he'll beat Joey Gallo. So I'll take Gallo.
Yeah, this is going to be my underdog pick. I'm going Story here. I just think I love when the hometown guys do well, and, you know, maybe he knows his part, gets amped up. Like to see it.
I think my head actually here is Story, just because I don't want to take too many long swingers, but I really like Joey Gallo, so I'll go with the heart and say Joey Gallo here.
Does Joey Gallo break 500 feet more than once in the first round?
Yeah. I think more than once in the first round only. I'll say one.
Isn't there also an award, a prize for longest home run? I could have sworn that was, I don't know, maybe I'm making something up. It's a great idea.
There should be. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're listening, I know you're listening, Manfred. So add that to this year if you can. The last round of the last matchup in the first round, Matt Olson and Trey Mancini. Head says Olson, mm-hmm. Heart says Trey Mancini.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna take Matt Olson, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe that stadium gets going. Trey Mancini, you know, backed by the crowd, pulls it off. I'll be rooting for it to happen.
Yeah. Same here. I'm going Olson. I love his swing. It's one of my favorites. Yeah.
I'm going Olson as well. I really want Trey Mancini, but like when in doubt, I go with lefty power.
Yeah, I'm definitely lefty bias in a home run derby. It's just the swings look nicer. You know, you just think of like Ken Griffey Jr. and some of the other great lefty swings, especially in the derby. In my second round, I've got Juan Soto and Pete Alonso, and I'll have Pete Alonso taking down Juan Soto, heading back to the final. Rapid fire, guys. What do you got in that matchup on the other side? Alonso, I know Darby's got something different.
I have Pete over Otani. I think Otani steals the show with the length, but I think Pete's got
that swing where he can replicate it and just go over and very over fast. And over.
Yeah.
On the other side, I've got Joey Gallo versus Matt Olson, and I'll take Matt Olson. I think Joey Gallo, he's a freak athlete, but it feels like he could just run out of gas, especially if he is hitting those 500-foot tanks. Like, there's only so many of those you can hit in Denver. So I'll take – yeah, and the other thing is, like, yeah, they're going to be playing at a higher altitude. It's tough on the body. Like,
no humidor.
Yeah.
Humidor, too, with the balls. So if they stay in the air, that technically is longer before – can throw them again if anybody's actually doing the rules, but that would be potentially long. So a 500-foot bomb is like kind of not as good as like 350 just down a line pepper in the pole.
I'll take Olson over Joey Gallo.
Yeah, I'm taking Olson over Story, but I think that'll be a better matchup than expected.
Yeah,
I can see. I'm going Olson as well.
Wow,
I'm going Olson as well.
So we all have Alonso versus Olson. And I think Alonso wins it. I think he goes back to back. I think I know I should have had lefty bias, but I think Pete Alonso, like we saw it in 2019, he has got the makeup to win a home run derby. It's not usually the player that you're most expecting to win it. It's not always the guy that hits the most home runs, although we've seen Pete Alonso get well into the 50s before across a season. And I've got him, I guess, yeah, call it back to back. It's been a couple years, but back to back champion, Pete Alonso.
Yep. Same here. He's done it before. He, like you said, he knows the rounds. I think he's the most prepared for it. So go all Gators.
Right, I'm going Matt Olson because I think there is such effortless power in that swing that I think it's really repeatable. And I think he might be able to shock the world there. Cause I think Pete will have a little bit of a pressure once it gets to the finals because it's now he is the guy. So I'm going Matt.
I like it. I like
that. I'd love to see Olson win.
Yeah, that would be fun. All right. We're going to kind of do our mid-season review of the Rays season thus far, but we're going to take one more quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
We're back on Raise Your Voice doing our mid-season review. Darby, I think you were on last year for the regular season review going into the postseason, where we kind of made up some awards to give out to Rays players. We're going to do some similar stuff here and then wrap up the show, let everybody raise their voice with some bold predictions for the second half. So let's start off with most disappointing player on this Rays team. And Darby, we'll start with you.
Now you got to think back, because it's been a little while since this player has been on this team. But full mea culpa with Brett, though I'm going to take him with me under the bus. We were driving the train right at the head, shoveling coal into the engine on the Yoshi Sotsugo breakout bandwagon. There was a lot to love under the numbers, under the hood last year. It did not translate at all. Like he just was too passive and also swinging at bad stuff. The power was completely evaporated. And you could just, he was just overmatched by any fastball, like any fastball of any speed. He couldn't catch it, which made him a really easy out, because that's just not the modern major league game. And it was really unfortunate, because he took a major step back from last year. And there was a lot to like from last year's version of Yoshi Sotsugo. Like, he adjusting to a new league, a new country with a pandemic, all of that stress. And he was still like in the 90s of WRC plus, and he still had showed off some power, and he still did some things that you're like, okay, there's something to build off of here. It was a disappointing first year, but I'm still like, this is a guy that I would absolutely buy. If he was not on the Rays, I would be like, this is a buy low player. This is a bounce back candidate. It has not worked out really well. He got DFA'd. He then went to the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are like, hey, we're also a really smart team. We're going to give him a shot. And you're like, maybe they can fix him. And it has not gone well over there either. And he just recently got DFA'd, and he has accepted his assignment. So he's now with Oklahoma City, the AAA affiliate of the Los Angeles Dodgers. And so it's a really kind of sad, disappointing year, because I really had high hopes for Yoshi. And I think at this point, it's over. Like, it's, I don't know. Like, maybe I hope that in AAA he can kind of feel a vibe. I really thought actually he could have done really well in Durham to get like a good feeling about playing baseball again back. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the Oklahoma City vibe is in AAA over there, but I wish him the best, but definitely the most disappointing Rays player for me. Just a big miss for me. And almost as big as any Yoshi swing on a fastball of 94 miles an hour.
I mean, it's a player that's probably one of, if not the most disappointing free agent signing in franchise history. So to put that in the context of this season, yeah. Brie, I'll let you go next. I think you've got another good answer for this. This award's not a fun award. We didn't start off with we probably should have started with a fun one.
We're getting it out of the way.
Yeah.
Brie, who do you have for most disappointing player that we can call up to the stage this award to?
So the player I chose for this award, I have been defending all year, and I'm going to continue to do so, because they are significantly better than they've been playing. And I'll also say, I think this award will not go to him in the second half. That would be Mr. Brandon Lau. He's still a very good player. He still is essentially an everyday player. Well, more or less, but I mean, just last year he was an MVP candidate. He was eighth in MVP voting. This year, we just aren't seeing that in this first half. I mean, you know, not to harp on batting average, but like, his batting average in 2019 was 270. 2020, it was like 269. Now it's 206. And, you know, on base percentage is down, slugging is down, OPS is down. So just overall, not a great start to him. But he has been picking up these past couple weeks, and I do expect that to continue through the break and into the second half. But, you know, just, it's hard to come off an MVP caliber season and just not do well. And that's what he's kind of been doing. So, yeah.
Yeah, you look at his numbers from the start of the season until the end of May, 31.1% K rate, 189 batting average, 9 home runs. Obviously, like, the power was still there, 372 slugging, not as high as it usually is, but it just was coming off of last year, like you said. Yeah, it was disappointing. I'm a guy that was supposed to hit in the meat of the order and potentially be the Rays' best hitter, and he struggled. And like you said, probably not going to be the same going into the second half. You look at the way he's really heating up now as we head into the All-Star break, and I think that's exactly what you want to see. He just passed his career high in home runs. He's got 18 now. He hit 9 more between the month of June and the little bit of July that we've played. He's over the Mendoza line. WRC plus up to 110. He's really turned it around. But if you look at the first half as a whole, there's a lot of glaring issues there that it looks like he's starting to fix. But definitely a player that I'd like to see more of as we head into the second half. I went with a guy, and I'll say this is a bit unfair to him. But in terms of the season and kind of the expectations I had, and I think the expectations the team had, I'm going with Chris Archer. And I know he's injured. He was placed on the 60-day IL, and he's starting to throw off a mound again, and no clue what his timetable is like. But you, when you looked at this puzzle that the Rays were going to try to put together with all the innings that they had to throw this season, going back to 162-game season without Blake Snell and without Charlie Morton, the Archer signing I was most excited about. Bringing a Chris Archer back that was one of the better players on some not-so-great Rays teams for several years, a chance to be one of the pieces on a team that was expected to win a lot, and they are winning a lot now. To see him kind of have to watch from the side, and I know he dealt with a lot of personal stuff too while he was away with injury. He's only thrown 4 1/3 innings in 2021. It just sucks. Only 2 appearances from Chris Archer, and now you look at it, and it's like, where does he fit on the roster? He's not going to be one of the guys in the rotation. You stick him in the bullpen, but like, who is getting booted from this bullpen? Drew Rasmussen, maybe? Is he the first guy on the chopping block? He's not taking Colin McHugh's role because Colin McHugh is damn near an all-star. And now I'm thinking, okay, our 1 year with Chris Archer might like be over. Like, there might be a point where it's like, there's just no more room for him on the active roster. And it's disappointing. Not really by any fault of Chris Archer, but it's been disappointing as a fan to see the way this has kind of played out. All right, let's move on. Something happier. The Rays are a great team. We're 52-36. Most surprising player. I'll start us off here. I'm going with Francisco Mejia. He was one of the pieces in the Blake Snell trade, and at one point was one of the top catching prospects in all of baseball. He was with Cleveland system, then goes over to San Diego. Kind of tapers off there, comes up in the big leagues a couple of times. Never really performs to the level that his he was a prospect for, but comes over to the Rays, one of the two catchers coming over in this deal. And the Rays, it feels like they really have a true catching core with two guys that can pretty much split time. He has appeared in 45 games this year, has 150 plate appearances, has gotten on base at a 322 clip, has a WRC plus at 102. And ultimately, like, I think the defense has been pretty good. Sure, the framing hasn't been as good as Zunino, but how many catchers can say that they frame as good as Mike Zunino? And also, robot umpires are on the way anyway, so who needs to frame anymore? but for Francisco Mejia to come in, and I think truly the Rays find a catcher that you're comfortable with Zunino splitting time. And I think besides the half year they had Travis d'Arnaud, that was like these first three seasons of Zunino, or first two seasons of Zunino, it's like he didn't always have that tandem guy that it's like, okay, Zunino's having an off day. Who's going to be behind the plate? You had Michael Perez back there who did a fine job, but I think that also kind of made Zunino's offensive shortcomings a little bit more glaring. So to have a guy like Mejia mixed in the mix now too is really great. And I hope they stay our catching duo for maybe a whole nother full season, which is like a decade in Rays years. So Here's the Francisco Mejia, my most surprising player of the season. Bree, who do you got?
Yeah, so I have Mr. Andrew Kittredge. I
love it.
You know, he's had some like legitimately terrible seasons as a member of Tampa Bay Rays, like really, really bad. I mean, I'm looking at 2018. His ERA was 7.75 in 33 games. I mean, just
legitimately. Some would argue he was the original opener. He like was used correctly. As like a,
you would be in a
bullpen day. I was at that game like, opening weekend against the Red Sox. He was like he pitched three innings, so it wasn't really like an open before Ryan Yarbrough came in, and that was what they would call bullpen days. But I don't know, that was kind of the genesis of the opener.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he had some nicknames going around. He was one of those guys. He'd come in and you're like, oh God, like, please no. And now, I mean, he comes in and you're like, okay, we're solid for the next two or so innings, however long he's going to go. So, I mean, this year he's been in 31 games. He's got a 1.54 ERA. His whip is 0.902, which is down significantly from past years. So, you know, I have been super impressed with him, especially as we've had, you know, Glasnow go down, Waka kind of get bumped out of the rotation and then back in, Archer go down. We really needed those, you know, bulk guys to step up in him and McHugh. And I mean, McHugh's obviously been great as well, but Kittredge, I was just shocked because we've seen him be so bad, but here he is. So love to see that. Hope it continues.
I have a strong theory with Andrew Kittredge that when he has a beard, he is a lights out amazing reliever. But when he shaves, I am terrified and I do not like it at all. So I think if he ever comes out like clean shaven, I'm like, I'm out. Get somebody warmed up right now. I don't love it. With a beard, the most comfortable, I sleep like a baby, easy. The other thing about, I love that selection too, with Kittredge and his great season, is that this is a really great guy to watch and see like, okay, Tyler Glasnow just went down with a very scary injury, which is a kind of a UCL ligament minor tear, which is a sprain. But
don't say the T word, please.
But all sprains are, so medical wise, that's what they are. But it's a lowercase T. But he did not do Tommy John surgery, Kittredge. He decided to do rehab instead after the 2020 season, and he is back without going under the knife by doing that rehab, and he is pitching the best season of his career. And he's got some of the best stuff of his career. His velocity is about as high as it's ever been. So it's a really good sign of like, hey, this is a guy who can kind of talk to Tyler personally about his own experience, his own health with his own elbow, and saying like, it's working for him. And that's what Tyler Glasnow is doing right now. So hopefully it works just as well. But it's a nice sign to be like, oh, Kittredge is doing well, and he's doing the same thing, which is rehab instead of surgery. So yeah, keep pitching well, Kit. And that's making me think of Tyler Glasnow coming back strong.
And he's responsible, you know, all those years ago for starting our Yankees beef. So thank you, Andrew Kittredge. All right, Darby, who do you have for your most surprising player of the first half?
So in the offseason, we got word of a signing, and I was incredibly thrilled for it. And I could not love the signing more because he has one of the most gifable curveballs in the game. He's one of my favorite pitchers to watch because he's not a velocity guy. He's a very slow throwing pitcher, but he just works through sheer rage most of the time. He's a very angry man. But he is 41-year-old Rich Hill, Dick Mountain himself. I was excited about the signing because I thought he's a guy that he can pitch out of the bullpen. He can pitch as a starter. And he's a guy that pitched really well with Minnesota. And you may not get a lot from him, but you're just sort of like, let's just pitch well enough until you get the young guys to get here. I am most surprised because I thought Rich Hill would be a really good addition to the back end of the rotation. He has been like a legit ace on this team. Like, he has pitched unbelievably well and been really effective. And he's, like, you know, given up a couple of runs as, like, kind of the game goes on. And you don't want to push him too far past the sixth. But, like, the Rays traded one of their top left-handed starters. And they got a better one right now. They've somehow upgraded. I mean, right now, the numbers for a former left-handed starting pitcher of the Tampa Bay Rays, 4.99 ERA, 4.34 FIP, 0.7 F4, nearly 5.5 walks per nine. For young as a spring chicken, Rich Hill, 3.65 ERA, 4.5 FIP, 0.6 FWAR, and a nice 3.23 walks per nine. So he's keeping the game in control. He doesn't go super deep. He has gone into the sixth like four times, which is just wild. He's gone into what, like,
eight
seven?
Innings against Kansas City.
It's like he sometimes is just, and he could have gone deeper in a bunch of these games that they pulled him right around like 50, 60 pitches to just, again, preserve the arm, which makes a lot of sense. So he could have gone deeper in some other games. They've done a good job with that. But he does kind of fill this interesting role of, like, wily veteran. Like, I love to watch Rich Hill starts because he'll, like, you know, work people over with these slow curves, this slow fastball. And then he'll just, like, drop, like, a sidearm. And it's just fun to watch a guy that doesn't have, like, crazy fast stuff. Like, him and Zach Greinke are just, like, super fun to watch because it's, like, they're just, like, they're just like inventing pitches on the fly. They're like, it's kind of my curveball, but I'm just going to throw it really slow and just see what happens. And batters are just like uncomfortable. It's just, and he works very fast. That's the other thing. He's very fast. It's just like, yes, he's getting the ball. He's throwing it. He's all grunting and weird arm angles. It's great. I love it. Love Rich Hill. I'm having a ball.
I've got some Rich Hill numbers, and I know we're primarily focused on the first half of this race season, but since 2015, which was Rich Hill's age 35 season, and the season he really became a starter again because he went through his early 30s, which are sometimes the best years for a pitcher as a reliever, and a pretty good one at times. But since 2015, he has made 111 starts. He's appeared in 112 games. He has a 3.03 ERA over 591 in a third innings pitched. He has struck out 10.2 batters per nine innings while only walking three batters per nine innings. He has a 1.07 whip and a 3.63 FIP. Also a 1.34 ERA plus. I'm using Baseball Reference right now. What a late career surge. And I kind of want to run the numbers. And I know he doesn't have as many innings as maybe some of those guys. He dealt with some injuries and other things. But, like, what other pitchers are putting up, like, ERA is right around three since 2015. I can't imagine very many. And how lucky are the Rays to get Rich Hill and maybe his last stop in his big league career? Who knows? But yeah, he's been great.
It's just showing Tampa Bay with 40-year-olds. It's like the fountain of youth. They're just, it's just great. It's great stuff.
I don't know if I've said it on this podcast before, but I'm going to say it again. But if you took Tom Brady and Rich Hill and you stuck them next to each other, there's no way you would guess that Rich Hill is the younger person, but he is. He's younger than Tom Brady. So, all right, last award. We're gonna do favorite newcomer, and I know a couple of our guys we've named could have fallen under that list. Anyways, the only rule for favorite newcomer is you can't pick Wander. No Wander. We're gonna eliminate him. Even, you know, he's only been here for a couple of weeks anyway, so I don't know if anybody would pick him. But we're gonna go elsewhere. For that, Darby, why don't you start us off?
A lot of good options here. I kind of want to go with Colin McHugh here as well, because, like, he was another guy that we signed. I was like, I'm so excited to see how Kevin Cash makes this work, and him and Kyle Snyder, like, what are you going to do? And he's been phenomenal. But I'm going to go with one of the rookies, and the Rays coming into this season really needed to rely on young pitchers, to step up, to really grow up really quickly. And Shane McClanahan is just a guy who's just seemingly coming into his own right now and becoming a staple of this rotation. Like, he's going to be in this rotation the entire season. He's not going down. He's not going to be working in anything on Durham. He's been asked to be one of the, if not the ace of the team now that Tyler Glasnow is injured. And he's really giving me some 2018, 2019 Tyler Glasnow vibes. And I say that because that was the year that Tyler Glasnow with the Rays wasn't fully realized. There was utter just lightning coming from that arm, just perfection, unbelievable stuff. A little hard to rein in sometimes. Didn't trust the stuff always, but definitely getting better at that with the Rays, with Kyle Snyder. But you could just see, like, this is top of the line, potentially some of the best stuff in baseball stuff. Now, he hasn't been perfect with the Rays, but the walks have been really under control. For a guy who, that was one of the big question marks, is whether he can stay as a starter, or maybe he has to go to the relief and be just a high flamethrower, strikeout guy in short relief, because can his arm last for like five innings at a time, six innings at a time? Can he keep those walk numbers? Can he keep his command and control? The command has been really good. He's trusted his stuff. He's been striking out batters. His ERA is a very respectable four. His FIP is under that. But what's really nice is that both his xERA and his xFIP are showing even better. So under the hood, it's still looking even better than that. His results have not been quite as good as the stuff. And the command has shown. And it's just really impressive, because I don't know if I thought Shane McClanahan was going to be as good as he has been so far. And I love to watch him pitch, because this isn't a guy that, he's not coming up like Blake Snell did when he was young, or even like when Tyler Glasnow was pitching with the Pirates, where there was just like, wow, this is great stuff. But like, I don't know if his confidence is there. I don't know what he's doing. Like, he is nibbling. He is throwing all over. Like, you got a 101 mile an hour fastball, and you have a wipeout slider. You have a pretty good change. Like, nobody can hit that if you just throw it in the zone, and they want you to throw it out of the zone, because that's the best way that they get you into those bad counts. They get you out of the game early. And even like today, he faced the Blue Jays, which is an incredibly talented lineup and a very right-handed lineup. And you have a potential MVP and Triple Crown contender in Vlad Guerrero Jr. And it wasn't his best game, but it was one of those impressive things where he kept the Rays in the game. He didn't give up a lot. He battled through four innings, but it was that type of game that's like, that's the type of Rich Hill game or a Charlie Morton type of game where it's like, this is my best stuff. I'm facing adversity today, but I'm going to just, by sheer will, give the team a chance to win and then pass it over to the bullpen. So this has been we're seeing him grow up right before our eyes. And this is not going to be the best we see of Shane McClanahan, but it's already very, very impressive, because I could see 2 years from now us having a Tyler Glasnow-like conversation with Shane.
Yeah, I think he reminds me a lot of Blake Snell, not the Blake Snell that was waiting for Kyle Snyder to be named pitching coach at the big league level, but the way Blake Snell kind of settled in after Snyder got to the big leagues. And I know that turned into a Cy Young year, and I'm not saying that Shane McClanahan needs to win a Cy Young soon, but he definitely has the stuff to do it. But like Darby said, the confidence as well, even when he's shown emotion, when he gets pulled early from games, he does it in a professional way. And I'm not saying that any other of the Rays pitchers or even Blake Snell has been like immature in the past, but I think that Shane McClanahan, he looks like he belongs in the big leagues. Like, he looks like he's comfortable where he's at, and you can kind of see him working out the kinks in his game each and every start. And today he had faced the Blue Jays for the second time in a week. He faced them last weekend, so that he wasn't getting the strikeouts that he usually can. He did end up with like five strikeouts in four innings, but he wasn't being, you know, wasn't able to put away batters with ease because they had just seen his stuff a week prior, but he was still confident in his pitches. He was still getting out, battling, and then ultimately, you know, was a huge reason why the Rays won today. So, and he's a really key part of this roster, I think, moving forward.
In that duel, though, you had a rematch of Alek Manoah, who stymied the Rays bats, and Shane
early on did in today's too. Today's start too. He looked incredible.
But the Rays were able to knock out Manoah faster than the Blue Jays were able to get out McClanahan. And like, again, lineup wise, the Blue Jays, like, that is their strength. That is the meat and potatoes of what they got. They have some of the best hitters in all of baseball, 1 through 9. And so that's just a really impressive thing to see, like, him be able to, because it's tough for these young pitchers. Once you get exposed once, batters really pick it up very quickly. And to be able to survive that gauntlet again, this quickly in a week, that's impressive.
Definitely. Real quick side tangent. Alek Manoah is going to give us nightmares for, I think, the next 8 years. He looks really, really good, and I think he's only going to get better. So good luck to the Rays facing him in the AL East and all other participants in the AL East for having to face Alek Manoah. All right, Bree, who do you have for your favorite newcomer?
So my favorite newcomer is Taylor Walls, because I love defense. It is, outside of pitching, it's my favorite thing. His defense, you know, coming up, you heard all these comparisons about how he was like, you know, the Kevin Kiermaier of the infield and everything. And I was like, okay, like, let me see it. And he has not disappointed at all. I mean, he is so rock solid there. And, you know, trading Willy Adames, like, this kid's coming up. They just traded their everyday shortstop to, you know, put you in that spot every day. So that's a lot of pressure for, you know, a team that's got hopes to, you know, make it deep into the playoffs. And he stepped up, and even his first few games, he never got too big at the plate. His plate discipline is just incredible to watch. I mean, same with Franco, both of them. But Walls, I've been blown away. He does not look like a rookie. He looks like he's been here for so long. You've already said he's one of the best defensive shortstops in the game already. And yeah, I mean, he looks like he's a veteran at that position. And, you know, at the plate, never getting too big. He sees the ball incredibly well. Very even, calm dude, it seems like. So got some speed as well. Just really, really great Rays player. And then he's got that versatility aspect as well. I mean, we've only seen him at short, and I expect him to play there, you know, almost all the time. But thrilled to have him up here.
I talked about it a lot last year during our playoff podcast, Instant Reactions, how you could feel it in the postseason that Willy Adames, and this is going to sound very cliche and baseball purist-y, but was a franchise shortstop. He was going to make every play that he needed to and then some, and he was going to play every day, and how lucky the Rays were to have someone like that. Maybe a type of player that they haven't had since Jason Bartlett. And that was only for a couple of years. And so to then move on from Willie and to have a player like Taylor Walls step right into that position, right? It's like, even if anything happened to Taylor Walls, like, you've got Wander Franco that can just slide over to shortstop. But Bree, like you said, to have a guy that can play defense at that level, and we know there's some bat there, and he really great plate discipline. Man, is he fun to watch. And he is quickly climbing the ladder on my list of favorite Rays players. I'm going with Colin McHugh, a guy that they added, and I really wasn't sure what his role was going to be. He had some really good years as a starter with the Houston Astros, and then ultimately became a really solid reliever for the Houston Astros. And he was going to pitch in Boston last year, ended up opting out of the season. He ends up with the Rays, and I'm not sure if they're going to use him as an opener, maybe even try to stretch him out into a bulk pitcher, maybe get him closer to 150 innings. I really wasn't sure. And he's adapted this multi-inning reliever role, and he struggled early on in the season before going on the IL. Then he goes on the IL, and he comes back, and he was probably right on the cusp of being an all-star, and who knows, there's still a couple days. By the time you listen to this, a couple pitchers might have dropped out, and Colin McHugh could be on his way to Denver because he has been absolutely incredible. 35 and two-thirds innings pitched, a 1.77 ERA, and he's been worth 1.3 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. He's got a ton of strikeouts, and he's limiting the walks more than he ever has in his career, and I'm just shocked every time he goes out there, and it feels like he goes six up, six down with four or five strikeouts, no matter what lineup he's facing, no matter in what game situation. He even has four starts for the Rays already this year, four opens. He has been, him and Andrew Kittredge, like we mentioned earlier, have been like these like pitching Swiss Army knives that you can put in any situation and they're going to get out. So yeah, Colin McHugh, a guy that I have, he could have fallen under my most surprising player, but he's definitely so far my favorite newcomer. All right, let's get into some bold predictions. We talked a little bit before the recording about who we were going to pick for these awards, just so we all weren't picking the same players, but we have not discussed what our bold predictions. I've got at least one or two. My first one, I'll throw it out there and we can discuss quickly. I know this is going to be a long podcast, but hey, it's the mid-season review. What do you expect? And Darby's on. So when Darby's on, it's always going to go like an hour. I think that Michael Wacha is going to have a Rich Hill-esque run of dominance at some point in the second half. And I think we might already be starting to see it. It might just start now. Hopefully the All-Star break doesn't throw him off too much. But his last outing was probably the best of his season with the Rays so far. He went 6 innings against Cleveland in a 7-inning game, struck out 6, walked none, and gave up just 1 home run. I believe it was to the Franimal, Franmil Reyes. But his last few outings, he's looked really solid. You go back to he pitched 5 shutout against Boston. And again, another guy that once he came off the IL, he's really started to put some good outings together for the Rays and getting some length for the Rays. He's gone a total in his last 3 outings. He's gone 14 innings. So I think we talk about guys having to shoulder the load. And I think Rich Hill did it for that month. We knew he wasn't going to do that for the whole season. You're going to see some other guys step in. You're going to see some innings from Luis Patino. Shane McClanahan's going to take an extension. Even the innings that we lost when Tyler Glasnow went on the IL. So I think, I think Michael Wacha, maybe hopefully it starts now. I'm not saying it'll be a month long, but we're going to get 3 or 4 really good Michael Wacha starts probably consecutively.
I'll co-sign that.
I like that bold prediction. I mean, it's been interesting. The last like few starts, it's been amazingly dominant, five run disaster. Amazingly dominant, 5 run disaster. So would love to get back to back of the good ones, but at least he's not avoiding the back to back bad ones. There is some interesting stuff in the way he's been pitching when he pitches well. So, you know, we'll see. I like that. I have one that kind of backs up a point that Bree was making with her kind of favorite, Taylor Walls. Taylor Walls, you may not realize this right now. He's been great on defense. We all realize that. But like he is currently in the top 10 of the defense run saved leaderboard. He has 8 DRS, defensive run saved, which is just 2 behind the leader right now, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
The catcher.
Plays about like 8 different positions. I think most of this is coming from shortstop. The catchers do not get very well. They do not
a rich man's Russell any Martin.
DRS. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So Taylor Walls is already up there in the upper echelon. By the way, DRS is a counting stat similar to like WAR or RBIs and home runs, whereas the more playing time you have, the more chance of accumulating that you do. So it's not like a short, small sample size can give you a huge like run like some of the other things like batting average or on base percentage. So the fact that with 237 innings, Taylor Walls is already in the upper echelon and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is at 10 at 750 innings, kind of showcases that Taylor Walls is doing a lot really quickly. It's fact that is a round 40 DRS pace. The record ever for a shortstop, and actually I think maybe the record ever, I think Kevin Kiermaier came closer, maybe even broke this, was 41 DRS by Andrelton Simmons when he was with the Angels in, 2017. So that was the best season ever for any shortstop defensively. And Andrelton Simmons is one of the best defensive shortstops of all time. Right now, Taylor Walls is on a 40 DRS pace. I do not think he's going to get there. However, my bold prediction is that Taylor Walls is the leader, number one in DRS by the time this season ends. By a large margin.
Then Darby, I have a question for you. Is Taylor Walls the American League Gold Glove winner at shortstop this season?
Oh man, I would love to do that because, but I don't think he's going to hit enough to give them that. They'll give it to somebody else because Gold Gloves are a really weirdly voted on thing. But
oh yeah,
he should be by the time the season ends.
The odds-on favorite going into 2022 would be Taylor Walls to win the Gold Glove at shortstop. All right, Bree, now you need to throw out a bold prediction.
Mine is based on not much, but so I think that Tyler Glasnow will finish in the top 10 in Cy Young voting.
Ooh.
I don't think he's going to win, but I think he's going to get up there despite missing some time.
So if he comes back in mid-August and gets 6 or 7 starts, that's going to put him over 20 starts for the season. It's definitely possible. And especially if he puts up the numbers that he was before the injury, man, I'd love that.
And honestly, I mean, just some of the other contenders, AL starting pitching has not been as good as like NL starting pitching or even as good as AL starting pitching usually is. So I don't think the field is as strong as it normally is. You know, we'll see if Cole can get back on track. I mean, he'll still probably be a finalist, but. Yeah, I mean, I think he could do it.
I'm going to double down on the bold prediction I had from last offseason, preseason bold prediction, that the Rays would be finish ahead of the Yankees in offense. And I just want to say that it's still happening. It's happening. It's not even bold anymore. I think it's just going to happen. And because what we've seen right now so far is the Rays offense has been in the top 10 of runs scored so far. They're doing it in a lot of different ways. The thing is that we have not seen any of the big core three batters play really well at the same time. So that's the big key, is that Brandon Lau is hitting really well now, but he was slumping really bad to start the season. Randy Rosarena has been up and down as well. And Austin Meadows has had some really good moments and then has kind of slumped and then back up again. So what we have not seen yet is any point in time when we really get like 20 games in a row where Randy, Meadows, and Lau are all hitting at the same time. And the Rays offense has already done pretty well without all three of them, but that's three of their biggest key hitters. If they can click at the same time, give it just like a 15, 20 game stretch, I think that'll be enough to solidify that they will be ahead of the Yankees. But the Yankees always have Baltimore there to cushion their fall.
I don't know how bold it is. I think out of the group of the three center fielders that they started the season with, that is Kevin Kiermaier, Brett Phillips, and Manuel Margot, I think all of them finished the season on the Rays. I don't think any of them are traded or DFA'd or what have you. I think that even like this is a, like Darby said, it's an embarrassment of riches, but one that is you don't mind having. Vidal Brujan can play corner outfield or infield. Manuel Margot and Brett Phillips can play corner outfield. There's gonna be some IL stints. Everybody should take their turn, get a 10-day break. I'm all in favor of that. And ultimately, I think the Rays. I think as fans, we take this look and say, oh, you have three center fielders, let's trade one and let's go get a starting pitcher or what have you. I don't think the Rays front office looks at the roster like this, and I think they're very much comfortable taking the current group of players that they have past the July 31st trade deadline and into the pennant race. So I think, if you're a KK, Brett Phillips, or Manuel Margot fan, I think they're all going to be here for the rest of the season.
My last bold prediction, it's not really centered on the Rays. However, I think the Blue Jays are going to finish with a better record than the Boston Red Sox.
Ooh, I like that. They are 9 games behind the Red Sox at this point, so they've got an uphill climb. But like the Blue Jays, and the Rays are playing them now, and by the time you listen to this, that series will be over. We know about the lineup, and they probably have the best hitter in the American League, or at least second best hitter in the American League. But look at the performances they're getting out of Robbie Ray, who I'm pretty sure on this podcast have said some very mean things about. And he is proving me wrong this year. what a season he's having through 16 starts, a 3.36 ERA, 11.4 strikeouts per nine innings. And he's keeping the walks down, only 2.3 walks per nine innings. If that pitching staff can stay healthy and you still get good outings out of guys like Ross Stripling, they're going to hang in there. Like, I know they're only three games over 500 right now, and the Rays beat them pretty handily tonight. But I think they're better than the Yankees. Like, I do. And I think
they're going to make some moves, too, for some relief help. And, I mean, they're scary to me. They terrify me.
Well, they do terrify me because every time it's like, okay, how are they going to get through? How is any Rays pitcher going to get through that lineup? And it seems like they had it planned perfectly today, that nobody was going to go through the road. McClanahan went twice through the order. Kittredge went once through the order. Springs did, and then Fireyzen closed the door. The pitching has always been the problem, but they've also, like, they brought in Kirby Yates, which was going to be a great signing, and then boom, he's done. So I think Julian Merriweather, another really good pitcher that's been hurt for quite some time for them. They've got other really good players, so I think it's only a matter of time, and then the Blue Jays are going to be right up there competing in the AL East. Mm-hmm. I've got one last one. I think the Dodgers win the NL West by more than 8 games.
Oh, wow.
Whoa, I love that. Okay. All right.
I've been saying it. I they're only a game and a half back now from San Francisco. That gap was like 4.5 just a few days ago, and now the Dodgers are right back in it. And I think as the season goes on and things start to even out, we will remember that the Dodgers still reign supreme in the National League and in the National League West. And props to San Francisco. I think they're going to be in the postseason. I think they're a great team. They could, if they get past the wild card game, and I'm assuming would face the Dodgers in that first round, they could beat them in a 5-game series. Anything could happen. But I think over the course of this season, the Dodgers are really going to pull ahead there.
I like that prediction too, because I think that also you didn't mention the other team that everybody talks about in that division, which is San Diego. They traded for a bunch of pitching, and they're still, like, I feel like a little thin there. Like, I think they, Denelson Lament is a huge key factor in there, but he is getting hurt a lot, and I very worry about his long-term health. Like, Snell just went to the IL. Yu Darvish is really good, but he did get kind of blown up today, but he's still probably their best pitcher. Joe Musgrove is really good. It's one of those things where it's like a good rotation, but like there is some question marks there. And when you look at the Dodgers, you're seeing like Kershaw, like head to head, you're seeing Bueller head to head, even Urias right now is like suddenly the Dodgers just sitting there, even with the obviously huge issues they're dealing with their really ill-fated and really dumb choice that they made on their own to sign a very problematic person who is showing to be some very, you know what, let's just say there's going to be some legal issues, and we will hopefully not hear from this person for a good year, and then let the courts decide what happens with them next. But the Dodgers are still just like this team that, like, they, anybody that goes down, they're just like chuck another person into the like pile. Like Tony Gonsolin's back now. They're doing all this. They're gaining ground. Corey Seager, who's like an MVP candidate, is just going to be like, oh yeah, he's back after the All-Star break.
Cody Bellinger, like, is like, he was injured and now boom. And they were still winning, and now he's back and hitting again.
Mookie Betts has been struggling at like 130 WRC plus, like, you know, like for him, it's, I guess, a little bit of a struggle. He's like scuffling as only like the 10th best player in all of baseball. Yeah, like the thing with the Dodgers is just their depth is so strong that it does feel like it's just this inevitable, like, the Giants and the Padres can't have injuries, they can't have mistakes, and they can't lose ground, because like the Dodgers just keep coming.
All right, any other league, around the league predictions? This is going to be, I think, close to maybe over the hour and a half mark on time. I honestly haven't been keeping track, so.
Around the league predictions, what we mentioned with the Dodgers, I don't think Trevor Bauer pitches again this year.
Yeah, that kind of fueled my prediction that I think the quicker they I don't want to say distance themselves, because they have a lot of things to work through as an organization. They can't just brush it under the rug. So I don't want to use that wording, but I don't know the right wording to use, but I think yeah, if he doesn't pitch this year, I think the team will be much better off. And yeah, I don't have any worries about their performance on the field with the other collection of players that they have. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting second half. It's been, I think, if you had to grade the Rays second half, I guess we can do that to end the show. I'll give it a solid A minus, and the minus comes from pitching injuries. And so it's really nothing they can control. They're 2.5 out. I don't think anybody expected the Red Sox to be this good. I thought maybe they'd be competing again, not at this level. And I honestly don't have, they don't threaten me in the long-term big picture of things. So I'll give the Rays an A minus. Closing thoughts, give the Rays a first half grade.
First half grade. You know, I'm going to go with an A. Tentative A, because, you know, a lot of people coming in were like, okay, Snell and Morton, you know, Snell and Morton are gone. Now Nick Anderson goes down, you know, like, what are we going to do? I mean, they've filled that and they've had a really, really solid first half. Then keeping it from being an A+, they're not in first place. I mean, pretty much, because, you know, even with all those injuries, still, Glasnow goes down. They've covered his innings pretty well. So, I mean, just the ability to replace guys immediately bumps what probably would be like a B+ to an A for me.
I like that. I think with the expectations coming into this season, as usual, they like off of a really strong season, they suddenly get wildly lowered. And everybody is like, okay, well, I don't know what they're doing. It's confusing. And like national media wise, the Rays are suddenly put into I don't know, they're going to just try their best. They'll probably do good because we don't know what they're doing. But they suddenly get, you know, dropped down. And they have been, again, one of the best teams in baseball. And through the first half, they've had a couple of losing streaks. But in those losing streaks, even as frustrating as they are, you know, losing 4 in Seattle, again, is just like mind-meltingly annoying. Even though Seattle isn't bad this year, it's still like, what is happening? There's so many, like there was 5 extra inning games. And those are just really a crapshoot at this point. There was a blown save. There was 1 run game. There is a lot of losses that you could just say like, okay, maybe 3 of those are more coin flips and they just go the other way. And suddenly that huge losing streak is just like, it's a fine. It's like kind of almost like 500. So even with the bad, the Rays have still had a really, really strong dominant first half. And like you said, Bree, there's been a lot of injuries. Like unlike the Red Sox, who have had a pretty fortunate, like injury-free first half with like kind of everybody clicking and you're just like, think like, wow, this is amazing. And if it stays injury free, maybe they'll do well. You are still looking at a team that's like, okay, they've lost Tyler Glasnow. They've lost Chris Archer. They've lost so many people. And yet they still have not fallen apart. Kind of similar to the White Sox in that way. White Sox have lost a lot of key pieces and have still just like been chugging along, but they've done it in the Central and the Rays have done it in the East. So I'll say A-. Because there was, you know, a couple of losing streaks there. June was a really frustrating month, but overall, I think they're set up really well for the second half. So pretty proud of what this team has done. Again, another year in with a lot of change, but still just churning out good quality baseball every day.
That they are, and it feels good to, like, watching a 162 game baseball season just feels like a soap opera because it's there every day. You know, there's times where you're going to get bored. There's other times where it's very exciting. But last year was just such a weird blur of a season. So to have this full season back is a great breath of fresh air. And I'm glad that we all get to experience it together. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of Raise Your Voice. Thank you to Bree Gonzalez from Raise the Roof and Darby Robinson for hopping on. As always, make sure to head on over to draysbay.com to check out all of the great Rays coverage. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll talk to you after the All-Star break.